We're back to the Neil Haley Show, and I always love interviewing authors. And my guest today will discuss true crime. Everyone loves it. Best-selling author Elle Marr, author of The Family Bones. How are you, Elle? Thanks for stopping by.
I'm very well. Thank you for having me here.
All right, so tell me kind of this story of how you became a writer. How did that happen?
It's what every writer loves to talk about, right? Just big dreams and lots of caffeine. Persistence. I've always wanted to be a writer since I was a kid. I used to, of course, journal in my own little diary. And then when I was about 9 years old, I kind of sneaked my way into an online writing forum for adults and started submitting stories alongside adults, just like regular stories. But I was pretty pleased when no one discovered I was a child. So I've been going at it ever since.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Once you find something you're passionate about, you'll put more time and effort into what you get paid sometimes for as well, which is unfortunate. When we can put our passion into making money, it's the greatest thing in the world. And when authors have success and keep growing, that's the process, but it's a grind, right? When you first started out as an author, you're not like, okay, I'm going to be able to get published, get this going. It's a process, right? It was not easy to get published, right?
No, far from it. I was writing for a good decade before I got my literary agent. And then after I signed with her, then things rolled fairly quickly. We signed with my publisher within a couple of months. But from what I had heard, actually, it takes around 5 to 6 years from the time that you finish your book to actually getting that book published. And that is absolutely in line with my debut journey, my debut novel that published in 2020. It took me 5 years by the time that it was done.
5 years. Wow. And
Five
so
years and I was writing novels for 10 years. So it's a
did
journey.
you reach out? How did you get that literary agent? What are they looking for? I know things have changed now, but what are they looking for?
Yeah, everything's changed now. It happened so quickly. I mean, I was querying for a good many years and I was all over the Twitter writing scene. The Twitter writing community used to be very active and supportive and with just a few Twitter pitch parties. Now there's a great deal and that's great. There's lots of opportunity. But initially there was only like four or five. And so I entered DV Pit, hashtag DV Pit, which is still around. And it's for books and other, a whole genre, like a crazy variety of genres of books ranging from thrillers, what I write, to picture books. And you just pitch your book in 140 characters and then literary agents or publishers can like your tweet and then invite you to submit your manuscript to that publisher, to that literary agent. And so that's what I did. And my agent loved my book and signed me, and the rest is history.
Wow. Okay. So it's about networking. It's a great thing. Nowadays, I'm sure it's more and more, you got to get yourself out there and be seen. Even it's harder to get a literary agent without a following, right? When you were doing it, it's a different animal. You were busting your hump on Twitter. So I guess Twitter was your thing, right? Following back, following the right person, putting together the right content, getting yourself out there. And that's hard. It's not easy for lots of people to do it. And I was in the grind in my radio show and podcast for over 13 plus years to get to where I am today, and with the radio and TV and continue to grow and having conversations, but you can't sit idle. So I think that's a great plan, is that just if you think things are going to be come to you and be handed to you, it's not the case.
No, far from it. And I would say like the key thing that you just said that I would echo is you can't sit idle. You have to continue to pursue your craft or pursue your passion, whatever that is, and trust that there, you know, your goals will follow. You know, I'm kind of a big believer in like manifesting, like put it out there,
That's truly
make it
it.
a part of your daily grind, and then it will come to you.
Holy.
Your efforts will lead to that fruition. But also I would say you don't need a massive platform in writing. People still ask me that. I actually just saw a Twitter thread the other day that I weighed in on. You don't need to have thousands of followers for a literary agent to take note. You really need just a good manuscript. And I had a several thousand followers by the time that I did get signed, but that's just because I was making friends across Twitter. No one that I knew put me in touch with my agent. It was purely through this Twitter pitch party, which is still very successful in matching diverse books and authors to literary agents and publishers.
Oh my, so that's the wow. I'm just saying wow about this because that's good news for authors. But you still need social media. You got to hustle. So the bottom line is you got to hustle. You got to be out there and you got to show that you're worth
Absolutely.
a darn. If you're not, forget about it. It's not going to happen. And I love the point you make about this, and don't have to have a huge, massive following. But you have to be engaged. You have to put yourself out there. And a lot of authors just don't want to. They want to stay right at the computer, right? They don't want to get out
I
themselves.
understand that. Yeah, it's an introspective kind of solitary job, right? You are just with your computer or with however you write. Maybe you write longhand. I only write my laptop, but you are alone most of the time. And yet we are expected these days as authors to engage socially, to be across social media. And I will say a lot of people don't like that. A lot of writers who are tend to be more introverted don't appreciate social media. But while you don't have to have massive amounts of followers, you do, in most cases, need to show that you've invested in what works, which is engaging with readers. The easiest way through that is social media.
I hope, Elle, you don't mind that we're talking about these other things because this is so valued to my audience to talk about these things. And
My
not
pleasure.
asking the same specific questions because if your knowledge base, what you're bringing to the table, is another thing to put in the back of my head because I've worked with authors in publicity and marketing for years in certain ways. And they've been guests on my show. And what I've learned is that authors really aren't told the right things. Everyone wants to create. We talked about off air. About starting a podcast and said, beware, beware. If you're not told how to monetize your podcast, run the heck away. And if they're saying you're going to monetize through ads, you're going to be one out of a billion that end up having instead of your really thing. But you start a true crime podcast, maybe you will become very wealthy because there are some that do very well. So let's jump to how true crime. How did you get this whole true crime thing? Because everyone's into true crime.
Everyone is. It's ubiquitous. It's across every single dashboard you have, whether it's your Kindle or your streaming platform, your Netflix, like shows pushed to you, ads pushed to you. You just can't escape it. And that's kind of where I took inspiration from my most recent thriller, which is just released, The Family Bones. It's a book about psychopaths, rather. It's a book about a what happens in a mountain, secluded mountain resort in Eastern Oregon when a family reunion of psychopaths goes horribly wrong. And when a true crime podcaster who obsesses over cold cases that the media missed digs her heels into this cold case. And it was really important to me to include true crime podcasters in this novel because it's such a phenomenon, right? And I also, in my book, The Family Bones, kind of touch on the capacity for good that true crime has. Initially, it was kind of poo-pooed as just a voyeuristic genre. People are just consuming this tragedy, but it's also in the last few years, it's become this vehicle for change and for possibility in finding answers for cold cases, which I think is amazing.
Well, I think it's huge and it's such a popularity in television. That's why people jumped on podcasting and books and to be able to write about this stuff because crime is just among us. It always happens and we don't know about it unless we're, working for the police or and brought into a jury. But this happens all the time. And to come up with these stories, do you want any of your books to become movies? Is that a goal of yours?
I mean, do I wake up every day? Yes. Yes, it is. It's always a goal. And I have some definite film interest in Hollywood right now. I can't really talk about it, but it is like so nice to have that support and encouragement across the readership, across like the life cycle of a book. If anyone's interested, please talk to my film agent.
Yes. Oh, so you have a film agent too. Acquiring that film agent, not easy either, right?
She actually came with my literary agents. They're a partnership, and so it was really convenient for me to find my literary agent, who I love, who got my book immediately, and then also to learn that with her came along this incredible agent icon in Hollywood who was able to help.
So, what tips do you think or do you recommend specifically enough what you've learned so far with the literary agent for someone that wants to try to sell their book to as a manuscript?
Yeah, and this is another great question. I always say it's about trusting yourself. Trust the sparkle that you have. There was something about your idea that shimmered, that was brilliant to you, and it struck you. Trust that it will strike someone else. It will strike another literary agent or readers down the line. The thing is, if you have a gut feeling about something, even if it doesn't work like 5 months down the line, like stick with it and keep mining that gold because it's there. If it was for you initially, it'll come back.
Okay. Now, I love the idea of psychopaths and all that. How did you kind of come up with the different characters that are psychopaths? What is your secret sauce
Yeah.
with that? Are you
I mean,
fan? Are you fan of a lot of those kind of stories of the serial killers and stuff like that? Do you study those? Are you interested in those? Does that intrigue you?
You know, I think everyone has a serial killer phase, especially with any of us who grew up with cable television. You just couldn't avoid it. I think anyone who discovered the internet, so everyone has a moment where they go down that rabbit hole. Maybe they never do it again. They regret it. I had mine, and I've been paying attention ever since. I wrote this book, The Family Bones, after learning that we don't know much about the origins of psychopathy. It struck me as really fascinating that this great big bad, in the media, cognitive disorder, is actually not as terrifying as Michael Myers makes it out to be. It can be much more subtle. Certainly there's a significant spectrum. But many psychopaths are actually fairly high functioning and occupy, seats of leadership at companies as CEOs or politicians or, any other number of places in society. And it's about those psychopaths and sociopaths learning to operate within our social norms, right? We all get tamed a little bit from childhood into adulthood. Psychopaths sometimes learn more or less how to go undetected as they're being tamed to
And
society.
do they ever get tamed from your research?
That's the thing. And that's what inspired me about the Family Bones. There's no conclusive evidence. Sometimes treatment is considered rehabilitative and successful if you get to a child young enough. But of course, to even label a child as having psychopathic tendencies is very sensitive and it's done very sensitively because otherwise it can have dramatic effects. But it's something that we don't know much about. And so I thought what we do know is that it can tend to run in families. So I thought, what would that look like in one family if there are multiple instances of psychopathy or sociopathy? And then through the generations, how would that affect those people? And then also the neurotypical, the people who don't present with psychopathy in any way, but and yet are surrounded by this environment of it. So, ergo, the Erikson, the main family of my book, The Family Bones, was born, and along with their generations of crime.
Now, define a psychopath for me.
Psychopaths, they are not, like I said, the big looming figures in the doorway of movies like Michael Myers. They are individuals who lack an ability to empathize with others. They are people that have an unhealthy amount of selfishness. Certain amount of selfishness and self-centeredness is healthy. It helps preserve us emotionally, sometimes physically. But psychopaths, when lacking an incentive to do otherwise, will always choose themselves. Always, always. And so it can lead to a void of emotional connectedness to others. And other times it can lead to accolades in the workforce because they are single-minded and determined and go after goals, sometimes to the detriment of others.
So it's almost they have a really ego. So there's a lot of psychopaths out there that we just don't. When do they snap to become killers?
Gosh, well, that's the question. Is it nature or is it nurture? Evidence shows us, and let me also give a caveat. I am not a psychologist. I am not a psychologist. I have done an extensive amount of research, and I did teach psychology at one point abroad, but not a psychologist. But my research has shown that we don't actually know. There's a lot of emphasis on nurture, on the environment. If a psychopath or someone with psychopathic tendencies is in a traumatic environment, in a neglectful environment, experiencing a lot of emotional distress, and that can lead to the snap that occurs. But most oftentimes, it's a lot less exciting. It's a lot less Hollywood-esque.
All right. Well, this is such great information. I'm intrigued. I could talk to you all the time. You definitely should have a podcast. You definitely hit all corners. I'm just intrigued by the psychopath because I thought of, I guess I'm thinking of just somebody who's what is another word for a psychopath, sociopath, and then also what are the ones that have lack of empathy, also that people hate narcissists. There's a narcissist and a
Narcissist.
psychopath. So what's the difference between a narcissist and a psychopath? Because I'm a semi-narcissist and I've been told that, and I'll flat out say it. I'm in help because of my days in professional wrestling and then having specific egos at times and being an only child that have narcissistic tendencies. I'm working on that. I'll be honest, I'm working on that. I don't
I
think I'm a
love the
psychopath.
transparency.
I'm not a psychopath. I'm not a sociopath. There was a really interesting person that does work with psychopaths and sociopaths that was on my show. Dr. Leslie Austin, who's an amazing person that I had on when I did this marathon of interviews at this one event. And I'll bring her up because she absolutely knows how to work with those people. You got to run away from them. I'm not, but I'll say I have narcissistic tendencies. I think everyone has narcissistic tendencies. What do you think the difference
Absolutely.
a narcissist and a psychopath?
Oh gosh, a narcissist and a psychopath, the difference between them is probably a butcher knife, right? Like it's about what is the extreme. And in any case, it's not going to be something that we see in movies. It's going to be something much more subtle. It's not going to be anything that is quote unquote sexy or like has been lauded across the media or like splashed across headlines. It's Narcissism is part of that healthy selfishness that we talked about. So I guess it really comes down to personal.
Okay, David Koresh, psychopath. Yes.
Comes down to your personality
No,
and your
I was
environment.
saying David Koresh, psychopath.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah,
Did you
that,
see
there you go.
there's a new Netflix on David Koresh, the
I did.
whole.
Yeah, I haven't seen it myself, but it's crossed my for you, my push.
And I'm sure the ID channel is one of your favorite places as well.
I haven't been there in many years, but I'm sure that all the algorithms are pushing that content to me as well.
No, if you had time, because you're busy writing, right? Writers don't watch things, right? They write. They
Well,
create
I mean,
things.
actually, it depends on who you are. It depends on how you do things, but yes.
Okay, so that's it. So we know, see, you're educating us. You're not a psychologist. You just play one on television. So,
Exactly. Go to Dr. Austin.
you have to look her up. She's interesting. All right, so best place to go, Amazon Everywhere Books, right? The Family Bones. Sounds so interesting.
AmazonBookshop.org, Barnes and Noble, anywhere that booksellers sell books.
I'm ready for it to be on Netflix. That's it. I'm ready for it to be.
You and me both.
Yeah. See, I'm the connector that knows all these people, by the way. So I'll have to talk to your agent. All right. You're listening and
I love
watching the
that.
Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you, Neil.
You're welcome.